Welcome to Library Voices SC. This is Curtis Rogers, Communications Director here at the South Carolina State Library. And this is Library Voices SC, the official podcast of the South Carolina State Library. And I'm really happy to have a group of folks with me today here in the podcast studio from the South Carolina Department of Ed's Office of Special Education Services. And they are Dr. Lisa Rayford, she's the Education Associate for Autism, and Elizabeth Moore, the Assistive Technology Specialist, and Josh Finley, who is an IT Specialist. So welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
Glad to have you here. So you guys, the reason why this came about was you all were here at the South Carolina State Library using our facility, doing some workshops, and I was actually out of town and was looking on Facebook and noticed some pictures, and you guys had some amazing stuff going on. So I wanted to be sure and get you here and talk about what it is you do, not only at your office, but different kinds of specialized programs that you have. So one of the things that when I went to your website is Robots for Autism. And I actually walked by one of the classrooms you were in, and I saw the robots, and I wanted to come in and play with them, but of course had 5 million things going on. So who of you would like to talk about our Robots for Autism initiative?
Sure, I'll be glad to talk about that a little bit. And by the way, this is a wonderful facility. We have enjoyed the opportunity to do some training at this
facility.
Great,
we're glad to have you.
Robots for Autism is a program that we are implementing in 15 of our school districts in South Carolina. It is focusing on students with autism spectrum disorders, and it is a very unique curriculum that is implemented via a humanoid robot and a teacher or therapist. The robot, while he is very much adorable, does not supplant a teacher, so we always stress that. But it's an excellent curriculum that focuses on social-emotional learning, pragmatic speech, and social skills that are often lacking in students with autism.
Okay, and how do the robots work? How do they interact?
So the teacher and the student will both have an iPad. A curriculum is built into the robot, and the student will go through 103 lessons over a three-year period as needed. The robot will respond to the student as he is going through different activities that are shown on the robot. He has a screen on his chest and also screen on the iPad, which takes them through some different skills that they need to learn as facilitated by the teacher. The neat thing about this program, and one of the things that really turned us on to implementing it, is the student typically takes these skills that they learn and generalizes them to the larger public, to the natural environment. So these are not skills that they will work on in isolation with a robot, but rather they take them into the larger world where they're really needed and are greatly able to integrate with the regular world a little better.
Okay, and I know that STEM and STEAM, those are two acronyms that are used widely in education, as well as libraries, because a lot of libraries are doing STEM and STEAM programming. But how does STEM and STEAM fit into this initiative?
One of the neat things is RoboKind is the developer of this humanoid robot and this curriculum, and he is actually used in STEM and STEAM classes as a buildable robot. Students are actually allowed to build and program this robot, and my team and I are looking at doing some of that also to further meet more of the needs of our students with autism spectrum disorders.
Okay, and so you mentioned that there were 15 school districts?
15 school districts.
And we'll have a link on our website, but I think there's a list of them here. Mm-hmm. So we've got Aiken, Anderson 1, Beaufort, Charleston, Colleton, Florence 1, Greenwood 50, Horry, Kershaw, Marion, Orangeburg 5, Pickens, Richland 1, Spartanburg 6, and Sumter. So did you start out with this long list, or did you start out doing a test somewhere? And feel free, anyone else who wants to chime in.
We started out with all of the districts.
Okay.
And then my team and I, we looked at data based upon the number of students with autism spectrum disorders being served in those districts. Mm-hmm. We looked at the poverty index. We looked overall at the programs that were already being initiated in each of the school districts. Okay. And what we wanted to create was a diverse pilot that included both higher and lower socioeconomic districts, larger number of students with autism and small numbers. And we looked at those districts that had a lot of programming for autism, meaning they had a lot of support, and those that didn't have a lot, that we could also provide support to. So a very diverse listing of school districts we have. As you can see, they're located all over the state.
Okay. And one of the things maybe you can help me understand, not being in the education or special education arena, is how do schools nowadays, I remember when I was in school, you know, how special education services and special education classes were held. How is it nowadays? Do special education students, are they in the regular classroom or?
Right. Yeah, it's come a long way since you and I were in school, where you kind of had one classroom down the hall. It's not the situation for everyone, but it's so diverse. We look at what a student needs. No longer is it one class, but rather students may go to general education classes and then attend a special education class for support of specialized instruction as they need. So it is never just putting a child in a class based on where their disability might be. Mm-hmm. It's looking at what that child needs and where they can best be served in the whole school environment. Okay. And the wonderful thing, and the reason we have a team working with the Milo Project, as we call it, AT and IT, is because you have that assistive technology supported by IT that allows them to participate in some environments that maybe before we had some of these tools, mm-hmm. they would have struggled a little more. And Elizabeth can tell you a little more about assistive technology in the schools.
Yeah, Elizabeth, I was going to ask you about that, because we here at the State Library, we actually have some assistive technology mm-hmm. devices that we will take out to public libraries, mm-hmm. show library staff how to use it, or show library patrons if they might be interested. I know they're mm-hmm. usually really interested in the cool magnifiers, mm-hmm. you know, the digital magnifiers and all that kind of
yes.
stuff. So tell us a little bit about what you do with assistive technology.
Well, assistive technology runs the gamut from low tech to high tech. Everything from page fluffers that you can glue puffy balls to book pages, to the high tech, to the magnifiers, to eye gaze systems, to some of those more computerized systems. And our goal is to match the student with the best AT. AT's premise is to match the need mm-hmm. and to make the student be able to function as normally and as fluently as possible. So we serve the whole state. There are actually two assistive technology specialists with the department, and we've divided the state up. And whatever a district needs, they contact us. We either put them in contact with who they need to be in contact with, or we go down and evaluate ourselves. And with Milo, I had the privilege of working with him in Spartanburg County District 7 prior to Lisa's project, because they had a Milo that I was there from kind of the ground up with. So I got to see how Milo worked, see how he affected children. It's a beautiful, beautiful process. So I'm excited to be able to work with that now in this more state level role.
That's very cool. And when you say Milo, I'm starting to think, because we talked a little bit earlier about how we love our acronyms. Is Milo an acronym for anything?
No.
It's just
that's
a name.
That's just his name.
That is his name. That is the name of the male robot, and they are almost finished developing the female version of the robot as well.
Okay, I'm glad to hear that, because when I looked at the picture, I saw it was two male robots, and I thought,
It is. It is two male robots. I'm a light tone skin and a dark tone skin, and similarly, they will do so for the females as well.
Okay, very cool.
And they've adapted the original Milo to the Milo version that we see today that we've demoed. Mm-hmm. He has a rounder face, a little bit more friendly presence. They've changed the texture of his skin from the original Milo.
Ah.
It's less kind of rigid plastic and more rubbery, so that it feels more lifelike. So they've made some adjustments to make him even more human-like, if you will.
Okay.
And the one thing that they did to really differentiate from a human to a robot is it has four fingers. Mm-hmm. Because they want everyone to recognize he is not human.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
He is a robot, but he is a bridge to that communication and those skills that those students may need to help the teachers work with them, to engage them so that they can more actively learn the curriculum, not only from the robot, but again, in the larger school environment.
Boy, it's really amazing when you think of when you start to deconstruct what really is going on here, you know, because I would have never thought about looking at the difference in how many fingers
mm-hmm. yeah.
they had, so you can differentiate.
They've thought it down to the detail. They even have reasoning for the spiked hair, because it stimulates response in the student's brain. So every detail of Milo has been thought about and planned out.
That's just amazing. And by the way, folks, you can go to our webpage for Library Voices SC and check out the link for the Robots for Autism program, and you can see a picture of, is it Milo and Milo?
They're Milo and Milo. Yes, they are.
So they're both Milos. Okay. All right. Very cool. And then, Josh, you work with IT, information technology. Tell us a little bit about what you do.
Well, generally, I just help out around the office with most of networking needs. We do branch out into some media stuff for training, anywhere from setting up projectors to making sure Wi-Fi signals are correct or high.
So he really has the most important job, doesn't
he? He has. Let me tell you, he was so integral in this project. Elizabeth and her experience allowed us to troubleshoot before we even got to the schools. And Josh's capability in terms of that IT support, what the schools would need, making sure they had the correct information, it was just invaluable. And that has really helped our schools to kick off a smooth implementation process with both of these people. I'm not sure how we would have done it.
Yeah, Milo definitely had some unique requirements for Wi-Fi strength, how far he could be, the type of information that needed to pass through between the tablets and him, and then back to RoboKind, people who own the curriculum, Robots for Autism.
Okay.
So there was a few hurdles that...
Well, and we didn't have this sort of information when we first got Milo in District 7 when I was there.
Okay.
So we took each obstacle, one obstacle at a time, and had to jump over every hurdle to get Milo working. So we were wonderful to be able to provide districts with these prerequisites and get them some of those obstacles out of the way before Milo ever actually set foot, quote unquote, in their district. So it really has been beneficial.
Well, one of the things that you mentioned is about the implementation process, and a big, huge part of that is training. So talk to me a little bit about the kinds of training sessions you've had to do and also your implementation process.
The implementation process was thought out very carefully. Where we had chosen a number of school districts, it naturally was in the process to determine if they were interested.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the first things that we did was we held an informational meeting for those districts to give them a little information about the program, why they were chosen, and then allow them to think that over, talk with their administrative groups, and determine if this would be a good fit for their districts. Once they agreed to or did not agree to, then we took the final districts and then we set up actual training. And the training involved not only the Office of Special Education Services and our staff, but also RoboKind. RoboKind is an incredible company with support from every angle. They came and did the training with us. Theirs was the half-day training on the actual logistics of working with the curriculum and the Milo robot. And then our office provided further support in terms of infrastructure support, assistive technology, and also the pilot parameters, how students would be chosen, protections we needed to have for the students' confidentiality. And then following that, the districts took their robots back, and they have begun the implementation process, which includes a parent informational meeting so that parents are aware that this curriculum is in their districts, the opportunity for their children to participate and why, following, of course, the child's individualized education program, and letting them know that we are here as support for them. So there are parent meetings that we will attend just for support for the schools. We will be doing on-site visits as a team to make sure that the program is being implemented with fidelity. Should there be any problems, RoboKind is there for technology support, and we are also there so that whenever there's a problem, we want it taken care of as quickly as possible so that the child participating gets the full impact from the curriculum.
Oh, of course. Yeah, that's what everybody's going to want.
Definitely.
When you talked a little bit about RoboKind as an outside company, and
they
that
are.
Kind of made me think about, well, the way state government works, you know, you have to get bids for everything. You have to go through this long, drawn-out procurement process so that we thwart fraud and abuse, so that, you know, public funds are spent appropriately. So how is this program funded, and what different kinds of things do you have to take into account with, you know, understanding its success and its continued funding?
Correct. Our office, of course, receives a certain amount of money for special education services from the federal government, and most of that is actually going out to the districts. A certain portion comes to our office specifically for professional development and support of our districts. So we were able to take a small portion of that money to actually pay fully for this pilot for our school districts. And that included not only the robots and the curriculum, but also some extra infrastructure support, as Josh talked about, and the training and continued support for them. This is a 3-year pilot. This is not a fad where we're in and out after 1 year.
Right, yeah. Is this this is the first year?
This is the first year. Okay. After 3 years, the districts will continue to own the robots and the curriculum at no charge to them. We will continue to support them, and we will be collecting data throughout this 3-year period because our goal is to truly put in their good curriculum and make sure that it's impacting our students in a positive way. And so using this data, we're going to monitor that. And after 3 years, we will start making some decisions about our next steps with this. If we see some things we like or don't like, naturally, we will monitor and adjust as we go. But at this point, we're going to take these 3 years to make sure, again, this is implemented with fidelity and to see what kind of outcomes we have for our students.
Okay. One of the other things that I started thinking about, not knowing a whole lot about autism, but you hear the word spectrum, and so you think there are a lot of different levels of autism. So how is this program used in conjunction with maybe do you have students that are at certain autism levels that maybe work best with the robots or maybe not so much?
Right. The spectrum is so wide on autism. We always say when you have seen one person with autism, you've seen one person with autism. And that is one of the things that we really liked about this curriculum as well, because people often ask, well, what grade is it appropriate for? It's not appropriate for a particular grade, but versus rather a skill level. So what, again, we look at is what skills does the child need to learn to be successful in the school environment and beyond? And if what that child need matches the curriculum, not vice versa, then this might be appropriate for them. We have examples of students who are nonverbal, who are able to work with it because there are a lot of symbols, pictures, and videos that the child can use. We have those higher up on the spectrum who might need to learn a few different skills from the curriculum dealing with interaction with peers, two-way conversations, which can be a struggle for a person with autism. So a child does not have to go through all 3 years of the curriculum, but rather the teacher can pick and choose the appropriate programs for the child. One of the programs we really like in this program is a behavior regulation mode, which teaches the child to use techniques to calm themselves down when they're frustrated or upset, and the child gets to pick different tools to use to calm themselves down, and then it helps them throughout the progression to use those not only with the robot and the teacher, but in the classroom, in the cafeteria, wherever that child might be. And that's part of that generalization that we want them to learn.
Okay. And going back, one of the other things that, popped into my head, you said this is a 3-year program. Are there thoughts or discussions about expanding it to other school districts later? Or because I imagine, you know, not only once everyone hears this podcast episode, but, you know, once they know that this is such a powerful powerful program, there, you know, I'm sure other...
We already have increased interest.
You do?
The robot, the idea of a robot, I think, is very new for a lot of people. And a lot of people, when you see it, because the robot really stands out, they're thinking, are we putting kids with robots to learn social skills? And we're not. This is a tool, much like some of the assistive technology. You might use a computer, for instance. Children learn different things from computer programs, from TV shows. This is a program that we're going to look at to see what the outcomes are. And then we're going to make some determinations. Is this something we want to expand? We have the feeling a lot of districts themselves are going to start pursuing this. We've been asked to bring the robot and share the curriculum with other groups so that they can learn more about it. Our goal is to have continued evidence-based practice curriculum in our schools for our students with autism. And I think this is one step in that direction.
And we continue to stress it's still teacher therapist involved in every step of the way. So it's not Milo teaching social skills. The teacher still controls it. Milo is a support. It does not replace that any teacher. Of the human interaction that is already in that.
And that's a really important. That's a really good point to make, because you know, nowadays you think with the increase in artificial intelligence and all of the different kinds of movies that you see coming out with and TV shows
with robots. We're not at that point.
still need that human touch.
Still need that human. Yeah. That is the most important part.
And talking about other assistive devices, what are some other kinds of assistive devices that are used, not only in this program, but maybe – you know, that school districts and libraries might not know about that they might have access to?
Well, with Milo and the tablets that he uses, of course, the most basic is the guided access, putting the tablets into the program, into the curriculum, and then locking them there so that students work through the curriculum, that they're not, you know, able to get out of the curriculum to go do anything else. As far as assistive technology for available for other schools, again, it truly is limitless.
Mm-hmm.
We can assist with anything from basic alternative pencils, again, to high-tech devices. It really, it runs the gamut. There isn't, I guess, a checklist, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it, there's so many content areas. There's so many options within those content areas. It is absolutely limitless what is out there for people. And a lot of times for me, it's important to remember that some of what we already have can be used as assistive technology. We just have to think about it in terms of that.
Right.
So again, you know, everyone has a smartphone nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
Technically, Siri is an assistive technology. That's
yep.
a speech gathering
mm-hmm.
device, so to speak. So again, a lot of times it's looking at what we already have and thinking of it in terms of assistive technology. But there's tons of things out there, and things come out every day,
mm-hmm.
From adaptive alarm clocks and doorbells to speech devices to eye gaze machines, which allow nonverbal students to communicate through vision. So it just, it, the possibilities are limitless.
And, you know, as far as IT goes, there are some assistive devices that are, you know, very low tech, but some, like here you've got robots and you talked about working with iPads, and, you know, I would have never thought, yeah, you've got to have really good Wi-Fi to do this. So
that's where AT&T
yeah.
have to love each other.
We're
we have to work together.
In the background, but we have to make sure everything is working
yes.
correctly for AT, especially like, and they, the one of the best examples is Milo. He had some very strict requirements that schools had to meet to be able
mm-hmm.
to implement him. Some of them were, I think, might have been security issues for some schools, and
mm-hmm.
others didn't have those same issues. I think the biggest problem with Milo, I shouldn't say problem, but the biggest hurdle would have been just signal strength.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of schools run
okay.
on a higher band,
mm-hmm.
and Milo runs on a lower band of Wi-Fi and a very close range. Probably about 10 to 15 feet.
Mm-hmm.
He'd have to be next to an access point or a router. And not all schools have a Wi-Fi router or an access point in every room, or maybe in the room that they wanted to implement Milo in.
Okay.
So
we were able to provide an access point
support.
To this
yes.
school.
Yes, we were lucky
okay.
enough
it.
To
we
be
lucky
able
enough
to.
To be
do
able
you
to
take
that.
Mobile Wi-Fi with you, or do you create hotspots?
We've taken Wi-Fis with us before. We've also used hotspots. Milo is able to use an Ethernet connection also.
Okay.
But only if the tablets he's working with can also be on that Ethernet
correct,
connection.
Yeah.
So the tablets and Milo have
you
to
see why I have a team.
Exactly.
The coordination
I mean,
of that AT and IT. Yeah.
yeah.
It's, and it's necessary.
It,
it's necessary.
Yeah, it is. If you want a program like this, you've got to make sure all of the cables are connected and all of the,
oh, yeah.
the
yes.
and everything is in working order.
Yeah.
So all of these details, is this something that the company RoboKind provided you, and have
they
actually been implementing this in other states?
They are implementing this. Texas has a large implementation. Other states are starting to get on board. There have been many smaller projects. This is one of the larger projects. That has been initiated. So they're very excited to work with us. We're very excited to work with them. And again, they have provided incredible support and technology with our team to make sure we have all the information necessary. And I wanted to add, you mentioned librarians
yes.
in working with this program. Josh and I have been working on a project for a few months now that we're very excited about, and that is the Autism Spectrum Virtual Library.
Oh, wow.
That's on the South Carolina Department of Education website.
Okay.
And it provides a myriad of resources for educators, parents, students themselves, all about learning about autism spectrum disorders.
Wow.
There are printables, links to research, strategies and interventions, and it's a really good website that librarians can share
mm-hmm.
with students who may be working on projects about autism. Students who are struggling to make friends with a person who has autism in their school, there's information there that librarians can bring to them that they can learn again and again, have those good peer relationships. So we're excited about that website. We'll make sure you have a link to that so that your listeners can visit there.
Great. Thank you. That's a wonderful segue, because my next question was going to be about, you know, how can libraries, not only public libraries, but, you know, media specialists,
mm-hmm.
schools with libraries. How can libraries be a part of either promoting this, or I know one way that we've been a part is we have helped you by hosting your training here.
Yeah, so, exactly.
How can libraries across the state help?
I think definitely information and awareness. Mm-hmm. We're talking about a couple of things with this program in particular. We're talking about autism spectrum disorders because the rate of students with autism in our state has almost doubled in the past 7 years.
Really? Wow.
That's a really big jump. These people are growing into adults. We have a lot of adults who may have gone undiagnosed 40 years ago.
Okay.
So to be aware of what they need, how to support them is important. And also we talk about the STEAM or STEM aspect of this. Mm-hmm. Robotics is a neat field to go into. Mm-hmm. And I think providing information on that aspect, and oddly enough for students who have autism spectrum disorders, many of them excel in technology.
Okay.
And so again, to bring that awareness and provide support to those who want to learn more about it would be an excellent role for media specialists either in the schools or across the state.
Definitely, because you know, I think there are a lot of children's and young adult librarians in the state who, you know, they work with a broad spectrum of the public, and it can range from, you know, students with autism and maybe even homeschoolers and you know, people who attend the public library programming, and I know they have a lot of STEAM and STEM programming and
right.
maker spaces and all that kind of stuff. So is there ever an opportunity that maybe a public library could request some kind of training session or information session from you?
Definitely. That is one of our biggest roles, as a matter of fact, across mm-hmm. the state. And we are going and actually bringing Milo and other information with regards to all of our programs upon request from different agencies. So, again, there's a link on the website that you can request that, and we're glad to come out.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool.
The more people can learn, the better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Part of this is really, you know, being able to get the word out, so
yeah,
that because like I said I walked by the room and saw those robots in there. I really wanted to know what was going on. I thought it looked really cool.
We had a lot of your patrons who did the same and actually
really?
Stayed after the training to ask questions.
Yeah,
yeah,
oh,
it was
wow.
knew it was exciting for a lot of people.
That's great. Very cool. Well, I'm so glad we could be a part of this. Is there anything else you want to mention or talk about before we wrap things up?
Yeah, and we are just glad to have the opportunity to have the South Carolina State Library so close to us.
Oh, yes.
Not only for the facility, again, which we really enjoy, but for the support that you give and the willingness to dissipate this information so, again, others across the state can learn.
Well, great. Well, thank you so much to Lisa and Elizabeth and Josh for being here today. And
thank you.
Hope to hear a lot more great stuff that you're doing out there.
Appreciate
thank
it.
You.